Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Life Book Member Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. So excited to speak with today's guest. I've worked with him on many of my other projects, but I'm excited to speak to him in the context of Life Book today. Dr. Sanjeev Chopra is on the line. How you doing, Dr. Chopra?
I'm doing great, Jordan. I'm very blessed. Great friends, family, traveling a lot. And delighted to be on the podcast with you.
What more could you ask for? So for those who don't know, Dr. Sanjeev Chopra is quite an incredible human being. He was the Dean of Continuing Education at Harvard Medical for over a decade. He's a world-renowned liver specialist, as well as a best-selling author, a keynote speaker, and so much more. I recommend you check out his book, The Big Five, Five Simple Things You Can Do to Increase Your Lifespan. If you're fascinated in health science like I am, definitely give that book a read. But that's not what we're here to talk about today, my friend. Today, we are talking about your other book, focusing on finding your purpose, living your purpose, and fulfilling that life vision. And that's called The Two Most Important Days, which you did with your co-author, Gina Vild. Is that right, Sanjeev?
That is correct.
So tell us about that book first. Why don't we start there?
Yeah, so what happened is I have a very dear friend, very spiritual, and about 12 years ago or so, we were having coffee and he said, Sanjeev, you've written these books? I said, yeah. He said, you won these awards? I said, Adrian, where's this conversation going? You know all this. And he looked at me and he said, what is your purpose in life? And although I probably thought about it subconsciously, just him asking that question made me ponder it. So I came back. I sat on the deck. My wife, Amita, was in New York with the grandkids. And I wrote on my purpose in life. And everything I do now onwards or then onwards has to be aligned to my purpose. Otherwise, no matter how much fame or fortune, if it's not aligned to my purpose, it's a distraction or a detour. And then I was invited to give a named lecture at Harvard Medical School, the Nathan Seidel Annual Lecture in Medicine and Humanities. And the person who invited me, a professor of medicine who ran that series, this was once a year annual lecture, said, Sanjeev, you're a pretty good storyteller, so you can choose whatever topic you wish to. And I said, Richard, I'm honored. Let me get back to you in a few days. And then I wrote to him and I said, okay, here's the topic. We're going to call it Dharma, Happiness, and Living with Purpose. And it took me about 6 months to tell my thoughts and note down my reflections and prepare the talk. And when I gave it, it was extremely well received. Now I've given it more than 100 times around the country, around the world. It resonates. I gave it on Tuesday at University of Massachusetts Medical School at Medical Grand Rounds, and I'm giving it tomorrow at Tufts New England Medical Center at Medical Grand Rounds.
That's incredible.
So even academic institutions, when they invite me, now they say, yeah, we may want to hear one of your liver talks at in the noon conference, but for the big event, Medical Grand Rounds, we want you to speak on happiness and living with purpose. So it's resonating for people. And the title, The Two Most Important Days, when I wrote it with my friend and colleague, Gina Vild, and we talked to our literary agent in New York, it turns out that there are tens of thousands of books with the word happiness in the title. So I chose not to have the word happiness in the title, and instead, a wonderful quote from Mark Twain, the two most important days in your life are the day you're born and the day you find out why. Right. So each one of us has a singular purpose in life. So that's the title, The Two Most Important Days, How to Find Your Purpose, Live a Happy and Healthier Life. And then when you open the book, you see the full quote of Mark Twain. And we have multiple chapters. We have poems in every chapter. We have a lot of practical things for people to do to increase their happiness quotient. I think people in listening would know about IQ. Intelligence quotient. We also now talk about EQ, emotional quotient.
Right.
And lots of studies saying that's more important than your IQ for success in life. But we also talk about the happiness quotient. There actually is something like that. And how can we increase the happiness quotient? and live a really, truly fulfilled life.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Anyone who's interested, please visit SanjeevChopra.com and find all his work. And then I also just want to take a second to plug our new project. I am loving doing the Coffee, Health, and Science podcast. I know some of you Lifebook members have heard about it, but it is live now, free to the world. It's really fun. We talk about health. We talk about coffee and everything in between. So please, listeners, give that a listen and tune into Sanjeev's episode on dementia, preventing dementia and cognitive decline. That one was fascinating, man. So thank you, Sanjeev, for doing that new show with me. I'm absolutely loving it.
Yeah.
But let's dive more into purpose here. Let's start with your life story and what put you on your path. You have an incredible story about how you decided to become a doctor as a child. Can you share that with the audience?
Yeah, happy to do it. So Jordan, I was 12 years of age. I have one older brother, Deepak Chopra, and he was 14 and a half. And we were studying in New Delhi at St. Columbus High School, an Irish Christian brothers school, arguably the preeminent all-boys school in all of India.
Mm.
Irish Christian brothers, very straight, very competitive to get into the school. We were fortunate enough to enroll there. And I was 12 years of age. I was very passionate about sports, particularly cricket, but also, you know, table tennis and tennis and running marathons and throwing the javelin. But on a warm, sultry weekend, I played a cricket match with my brother. We had a team and we challenged another neighboring team. And that Sunday evening around 6 o'clock, I'm tired. I'm reading Reader's Digest. There used to be a section called Word Power, How to Improve Your Vocabulary. And I'm not feeling well. And I just, something wrong. So I close my eyes, I take a nap, and about 30 minutes later, I wake up and I'm terrified. I can't see. Everything is dark.
Wow.
So I nudge my brother, who's in the bed next to me, reading. And I said, Deepak, I can't see. And he must have done visual thread, taken his two fingers and poked them in front of my eye. And I didn't blink. And he reckoned I wasn't faking it, and he actually started to cry. I have one brother, and he's turned blind. So my uncle, with whom we were staying, our parents wanted us to finish our schooling, so we were staying with my dad's younger brother, one of my favorite people, a journalist, an author, a writer, brilliant, witty. He takes me to the military hospital in Delhi. My parents are 300 miles away. And there the doctors at the military hospital examined me. They don't have the foggiest idea what's going on. I can hear them talking. I hear the words hysterical blindness. I'm this happy kid. I'm a very good student. I'm a really good athlete. And I believe including an ophthalmologist. And then they get a hold of my dad, 300 miles away in an army jeep. This is 1961, long distance phone call. And very calmly, he was a professor of medicine, brilliant, absolutely knew everything in medicine.
Wow.
You know, I don't know how he knew it. He just cognized it. He had intuition. He had intellect. And very calmly, he said to them, tell me what's gone on with Sanjeev in the last 2 months. Everything. Any accidents, injuries? They said, oh, yeah, he had an accident about 6-7 days ago. He got a sharp object lacerated his right thigh, and he was taken to the casualty ward, and he got stitches. He said, did he get an antibiotic? And they looked, they mentioned the antibiotic. Then he said, did he get a tetanus shot? Very proudly, they said, and this is 1961, they said, yes, he was given a tetanus shot. And he asked one more question, what kind of tetanus shot? And there were two kinds, anti-tetanus serum, an anti-tetanus toxoid, ATS or ATT. So they looked at the records and they said he was given ATS. And I don't know how my father divined it, but he said, Sanjeev is having a rare idiosyncratic reaction, a delayed reaction to the anti-tetanus serum. It probably occurs less than 1 in 1,000,000 people. He has severe bilateral optic neuritis. Both optic nerves are swollen, ready to burst. Start an intravenous and give him massive doses of corticosteroids.
Wow. Wow.
And that was done in about 8 hours, 9 hours later, my vision returned. I could see the walls of the military hospital. They're all painted green, all the corridors and rooms. I've told this story to professors of ophthalmology in our country at UCLA, Stanford, Duke, Harvard, Mass Eye and Ear Institute. And my brilliant ophthalmology colleagues and professors are dumbfounded and impressed. My God, how did your father know that? May not have even been a footnote in the textbooks of that time. And Sanjeev, we can only speculate, but you could have been blind or visually impaired for the rest of your life had you not gotten those corticosteroid injections. So the next morning, I'm reflecting on it and saying, wow, you know, I got really lucky. And I want to follow in the footsteps of my father and fulfill my dharma, which is authenticity, moral compass, truth, vocation, and become a doctor like my father.
Jeez.
So it was at that age, 12, at age 12, which is now 58 years ago, that I decided to be a doctor. And I've loved every moment of it.
That is an incredible story. It's incredible, man. And you've really, I mean, I don't want to just keep blowing smoke here, but you've really gone far. You're a world-renowned speaker and Harvard doctor. What do you attribute that success to? I mean, I know your father probably as a role model was a big part of it. Do you contribute it to the character traits or the way you were raised? And then let me follow up with, what advice do you have for someone who may be, you know, thinking of entering an equally demanding and competitive field as the road you took?
Yes, so I got very, very lucky at every step of the way, from medical school to postgraduate training, internship, residency, fellowship, junior faculty. I had colleagues, but more importantly, senior colleagues, you know, the chairs of medicine, the deans of the medical school, the vice chair of medicine, the chief of the gastroenterology division, packed my parachute, you know. They nurtured me. They encouraged me.
Wow.
They gave me opportunities. I call it packing other people's parachute. And I got so fortunate. I did have a lot of determination and willpower and grit.
Mm-hmm.
And at a very young age, I made my goals in life. I embraced the concept that success is a journey, not a destination. That in order to have success in life, one has to have success in all the domains. You know, it has to be professional success, personal success, financial success, spiritual success, physical success, social success. So I wrote down my goals. And then next to each of the goals, there had to be a 5-year action plan, a 1-year action plan, a monthly action plan,
nice.
A weekly action plan. Right? A vision without action is simply a hallucination.
I love that.
And then the other thing I embraced, which I had read, was that when you make your goals, and I asked this of amazingly accomplished young people, medical students, interns, residents at the most brilliant academic institutions in our country and abroad, as well as junior faculty, people who've already finished their training and on the trajectory of an amazing career. And I say, when you make your goals, should they be lofty or should they be realistic?
Right.
And every time I've asked this question, it's amazing. There's been like a split. If there are 100 people in the room, like 50 or so will say lofty, and the other 50 will say realistic.
Right.
And what I say is that they should be lofty. They can't be crazy lofty. If I'm a passionate golfer and I picked up the game about 25 years ago, and one of my goals was to be a single-digit handicap golfer. And my friends who were learning at the same time said, come on, it's impossible. It's a very tough sport. The average person doesn't break 100, which is a 28 handicap. You're talking about 10 and less. I said, yeah, I'm going to do it. I can't conceive of driving the ball 330 yards like Rory McIlroy.
Right.
But can I conceive of being a single-digit handicap? Yes. I took lessons. I practiced. I love the game. And at one stage, before my two hip surgeries and back surgery, I got down to a 7 handicap. And I ascribe it to the fact that I had a vision, I had the belief. There's the saying, capacity is the state of mind.
Mm.
What the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. Thoreau once said, if you have built castles in the air, your work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now go put the foundations underneath.
Wow.
Michelangelo once said, the greater tragedy for most of us is not that we aim too high and fall short. It's that we aim too low and reach the mark.
Wow.
And Henry Ford once said, whether you believe you can do a thing or believe you cannot, you're right. So, I love that quote. So I embraced these concepts. I wrote down my goals. I wrote an action plan and I worked at it. One of my goals in my profession was to become a full professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, to win teaching awards, national, international, and to write a single author book on liver disorders for the medical profession. So I wrote the goal. Those days, I was absolutely obsessed with tennis. I was playing in New England in regional tournaments.
Wow.
And when I wrote that goal, I said, okay, now you have to write down the table of contents, preface, and write 2 chapters and submit it to 5 publishers. So I stopped playing tennis. I stopped playing tournaments. I had a tennis court in my home. I had a ball machine. I burnt the midnight oil. I wrote. I went to the Countway Medical Library, the biggest medical library in the world at Harvard Medical School. I would dig up the original articles, either Xerox them, or take furious notes. There was no Google. There was no internet.
Mm-hmm.
There was no Wikipedia.
Right.
There was no up to date. And then I wrote all that and I finished it in 5 weeks. I sent it to 5 publishers. And 4 of them wrote back and said, we love the way you write, but you may not have realized we already have a major textbook, thousands of pages, gastroenterology and hepatology. So thank you, but no thank you. And the 5th guy, a publisher from New York, wrote to me. Those days, people wrote letters. There was no email. And said, I love your writing style. I'd like to come to Boston and take you out for lunch. So we go to a famous seafood restaurant in Boston called Legal Seafood. We sit for lunch. And the first thing he says to me, he says, we're not interested in your book. And I go, really? You came all the way from New York. You're buying me lunch and you're telling me you're not interested. And the guy says, I love your writing style. Every sentence is loaded with information. It is very beautifully written. It's articulate and there's no wastage of words. We are looking for somebody to edit a GI, gastrointestinal disease, pathophysiology book, which would be taught to second-year medical students around the country. Would you be willing to be the editor? So I looked at him. I said, send me a contract. And in the back of my mind, this line is playing. In every adversity is the seed of greater success.
Mm.
And I said to myself, I'm going to get 2 books out of this. I'm still going to get somebody to publish my liver book, and now I'm going to edit a major GI pathophysiology textbook.
Jeez.
For medical students. So he sent me a contract. I reached out to a friend and colleague at Harvard Medical School, Roger May, an amazing, saintly individual. And I said, Roger, you and I know all the top gastroenterologists in Boston, at Harvard, all the teaching affiliates, the 17 hospitals, Boston University, Tufts, UMass. I've already developed a table of contents, some potential authors. Why don't you and I edit and be the editors of this new book?
Mm-hmm.
So we did it. That was very well received, was taught in medical school for years. And my book, Disorders of the Liver by Sanjeev Chopra, got published by a very good publisher, got translated into multiple languages. And
you were off and running.
Sort of the spring road for my first book.
Totally.
Now I've been fortunate to have written 9 books.
It's incredible, man. I think here's what I want to say. I think that a lot of what I see emanate from you is wisdom. I like that the first thing you said was, I was incredibly lucky. You're wise enough to know that you were lucky. But also, all the things you said along the way, you know, burning the midnight oil, and you had all these quotes in the back of your mind. That's wisdom, man. I think that wisdom is being passed over.
Yeah.
I think that wisdom is being passed over lately for other endeavors. And do you feel that you're educated? I mean, you embody education, man. You know what I'm trying to say here? Do you feel that that is kind of missing from popular society a little?
You know, it is, because I think a lot of young people are looking for instant gratification.
Mm.
And that social media, if I put something on Facebook or Twitter and I don't get a gazillion likes, or this friend that I really like, she or he has been silent.
Right.
They're feeling rejected. They're feeling dejected. But at the same time, there are young people doing the most amazing things.
That's true.
So I was recently in Florence, Assisi, and Copenhagen. So, you know, 2 countries, 3 amazing cities,
mm-hmm.
Celebrating something special and meeting friends from London and Dubai and India and England and Singapore. And in Copenhagen, where we spent 6 days, I decided to go get a cup of coffee and have a cigar, my one vice, which I have, you know, maybe 3 cigars a week, at a wonderful cigar shop, Macanudo cigar shop in Copenhagen. So I buy some nice cigars, Cuban cigars, and I turn to the sales lady and I said, is there a place where one could smoke this? She said, oh, downstairs, spiral staircase, take it downstairs. There are a few people sitting there. There's wonderful free coffee, and help yourself to it. So I sat down. There were 3 other people there, 2 quietly working on their laptops. The third one sitting on table, a young man. And he looks up and he says, wow, look at your shoes, your sneakers. They're red, pink. And you're also wearing a nice jacket on top of that. What an unusual but wonderful combination. So I smiled at him and I said, where are you from? He said, I'm from the States. I said, come on, I know you're from the States. I can tell from what you're wearing and your accent. Where in the States? So he mentions. And I said, so am I. So we sit down and he says, what's your name? And so I tell him my name and he quickly goes to Wikipedia, looks me up, and he goes, oh my God, how lucky for me to meet you. And so this is a 24-year-old guy, Nick Rooney, and he's been there for 4 years. He loves Copenhagen. He teaches American football to 50, 19-year-olds Danes. And he said, I'm making very good money. I'm thinking of buying a place in Europe. He was a semi-pro in football.
Wow.
We started talking and he said, now I have this notebook where I take notes. Do you mind if I take notes? I said, no, not at all. So he's furiously writing in the notes some of the quotes I'm making, books I'm recommending, TED Talks. Then he says, can you do a podcast with me? I do a podcast. It's all about being upbeat, positive, happiness. So you're the perfect guy. I said, Nick, how about tomorrow? I'll come back. We'll meet here at 3 o'clock and spend an hour or two and do the podcast. So then he calls his father. His father's, I think, in Montana, and talking to him on Skype, telling him how he met me. His father has the same birthday as mine.
Wow.
Which is what I'm celebrating in Florence and in Copenhagen.
Wow.
A special 70th birthday. Now, he's 24. Nick is 24. His father's 52, so he's much younger. And then the next day when I go to do the podcast, he says, you won't believe this. My dad just sent me a text saying that a good friend of his called him and said he bought a ticket for him, his father, and the friend, 2 tickets, and they're going to go see an event, go to an event like in 6 weeks and listen to Deepak Chopra, my brother. So here I am in Copenhagen, and this is playing out. You know, we became very good friends. He walked me to the garden where I was going to meet Amita and this other couple we were vacationing and traveling with. And then at the end, he said, "Can I get a hug from you?" He knew about Napoleon Hill, how to think and grow rich. He knew about, you know, Dale Carnegie, how to win friends and influence people. He knew about gratitude. I said, "How's it? How's this experience teaching 50, 19-year-old Danes American football?" He said, "Oh, my God, it's amazing." He said, "We have a three-hour workout and practice. Before we start, I go around the group and I say, each one of you has to say in 15 seconds what you were grateful for in the last 24 hours. So they start with gratitude.
It's incredible.
Isn't it?
Absolutely.
This 24-year-old guy. This guy is going to go places.
That's so cool, man.
I was the 35th podcast. He's already done 34.
You're
including
awesome,
on serious topics like, you know, suicide prevention and mentoring. And amazing guy. And we just connected.
Do you know the name of the podcast? Can you shout it out?
Oh, I don't know the name, but...
I'll dig it up. I'll dig it up and I'll put it in the show notes.
If you look up Nick Rooney.
Nick Rooney.
Yeah, Nick Rooney.
Podcast. I'm sure it'll come
right up. It'll come to me. Yeah. So I'm on it. So if you Google Sanjeev Chopra, Nick Rooney, you'll see our photograph and then the podcast.
That's great, man. Well, listen, I want to touch on something here. You know, you mentioned succeeding at all areas of life, not just pigeonholing yourself into one.
Yeah.
And then that story you just told kind of reminded me, you know, an overarching theme of that is also the relationships, you know, the containers that you have these experiences. Where do relationships fit into your life purpose? And isn't that what it's all about, man? Connectivity and making value and spending time with family. Can you just talk on that for a second?
Yeah. You hit it on the head. So in my talk and in the book I wrote with Gina, we reflect on how four things make you happy. Number one, having a cadre of good friends. Mm. Your friends are your chosen family. Robert Louis Stevenson, a friend is a gift you give to yourself. Khalil Gibran, friendship is a sweet responsibility, never an opportunity. So that's friends. Number one is ability to forgive. Number three is doing something for others, being of service, nurturing, mentoring, volunteer work. So I call it the three S, friends, forgiveness for others. But the fourth one begins with G. And interestingly enough, it's not God, it's gratitude. But happiness is more than the sum total of happy moments. And in order to have sustained happiness, we have to find our purpose and live it. And we can find our purpose in one of two ways, either reflecting on it, or sometimes people witness something horrific and tragic, and they're moved. And they have the fortitude, the grit, the compassion, the courage to say, you know what, this is unacceptable. I'm going to try and make a difference here. And they start slow, and before you know it, they've been doing it for 40 years. You know, we can talk about the story of Papa Jaime. But in terms of friends, the most amazing study, which is still ongoing, there is no study like it. It's now almost eight decades, so 80 years. It's called the Harvard Study on Adult Development. The Harvard Grand Study. So they took about 700 20-year-olds in Boston. A little less than 300 went to Harvard. The others were growing up in poor parts of Boston, Dorchester, Roxbury. All white men. And they followed them now for almost 80 years. As of a few years ago, 19 were still alive at age 91. And they interviewed them every single year, detailed questionnaires. Then they started to do physical examinations, blood tests, functional MRI. Then they did home visits. Then they started to interview their spouses. Now a cohort of their children are being followed. There's no study like this. Can you imagine?
That's crazy.
And of that group, what happened? Some became doctors, lawyers, CEOs. Some became skid row alcoholic derelicts. Some died of suicide.
Wow.
One became our president, John F. Kennedy.
Right.
Was in that cohort. And what is the major conclusion of the study? The major conclusion of the study is that loneliness is toxic.
Wow.
That your satisfaction with relationships with friends, and of course, some of your dearest friends can be your family, but satisfaction with relationships with friends at age 50 is a better predictor of health, happiness, and longevity 3 decades later at age 80. Better than what? Your blood pressure, your cholesterol, your other tests, your MRI.
Wow.
You know, unbelievable.
Totally.
Right? And so I would encourage the listeners to read a book. It's called The Triumphs of Experience, Triumphs of Experience by George Valiant. He was the principal investigator for this study for like 27 years, professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, and he wrote a whole book about this. And if you don't want to read a book and you want to listen to a brilliant TED Talk, then listen to Robert Waldinger, Waltinger. It's all about this study, and it's entitled What Makes a Good Life? And he talks about the research.
Love it.
Amazing,
man.
Right?
Incredible. And it makes perfect sense. You know, if you think about it, if you think about our evolution, if you think about where we came from, if you think about the ills of society now and what they're stemming from, this all doesn't really come as a surprise to me, but it's still very fascinating.
Yeah. So I encourage young people and people I speak to in my talk on Two Most Important Days, Reflections on Lasting Happiness and Living with Purpose. I say, celebrate everything small or big with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody gets a promotion. Somebody comes back from a holiday, an adventure, hiking trip. Get together with them. Have coffee, have breakfast, have lunch, go out for dinner, see a movie, and talk about it. And you'll be so happy. There's a best-selling author by the name of James Rohn, R-O-H, and he died a few years ago. And he once famously said, you are the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have friends who gamble, overeat, overdrink, oversmoke, you'll gravitate. You'll become like them. You'll become their average.
Uh-oh, I think you just described me and you, Sanjeev.
Right.
I think you just described me and you, Sanjeev. I'm eating and gambling and you're smoking. No, I see. I'm just joking. I see what you're saying, man. You're dead on. You're dead on.
Right?
You're 100% right.
If you have friends who expand your boundaries, who like to travel, who like to take part in charitable events, who like to inspire other people, you'll slowly, without even realizing it, become like them.
That's true. Yeah, 100%, man. Well, let me ask you this, Sanjeev. I like to touch on this topic with people who are, you know, connected with purpose, also people who deal with young people. And the reason I like to bring up this question is because it's pertinent. It's something I'm seeing now. It's something I'm seeing in my own sphere, which is a lot of people, especially young people, are struggling to find their purpose. And it's, I don't know if it's overwhelm from too many options or intimidation from social media making people's lives look grander than it is. But you'll ask these kids, what do you want to do with your life? They'll say, I don't know. And then you'll follow up with, well, what do you enjoy doing? And oftentimes they'll say, I don't know. What do you think that is? Do you have any advice for someone who just is really struggling? They're smart. They just, something's missing.
Yeah. So I mentioned Nick Rooney, this 24-year-old, pretty amazing young man currently living in Denmark. We didn't talk about Greta Thunberg.
Oh, right.
She's 16-year-old.
The activist,
16 years of age. Activist. She has Asperger's syndrome. She looks at the world black and white. She's very focused. She's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. If she gets it, she'll be the youngest ever. Malala was 17.
Wow.
She took a 2-week-long trip from Sweden to New York in a boat that registered a 0 carbon footprint.
Wow.
She said, I'm not going to fly. And because of her, on March 15th, in 100 countries, kids did not go to school. And they created awareness about climate change.
Mm-hmm.
She is so passionate. just last Friday, in 125 countries, kids did not go to school and against marched. She has presented at the United Nations, met every chancellor, dean, president, prime minister, presented at Davos, an amazingly young, focused individual. So I think for young people, they need to hear about role models like that, people whom they can relate to. The second thing, which I teach with my friend whom I mentioned earlier, Adrian Wilkins, in a workshop we do called Invitation to Happiness, is we give everyone attending the conference 33x5 cards. And we say, this is for a month. Every day, at the end of the day, for the next 30 days, write down, reflect on, and then write down 2, 3, 4 things you did that day. And then next to it, give it a rating from 1 to 10, where 1, you were miserable. 10, if you were lucky, you were ecstatic, you were in bliss. You're going to have very few 1s and very few 10s. But at the end of the month, look at everything and then strike out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Look at 6, 7, 8, 9, and maybe there was a 10 or 2 there. That's what made you happy. That's what resonated for you. Mm-hmm. Your purpose is lurking in there. It'll come to you.
Don't fight it. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I think that's good. Going with your heart, maybe. I think we're all up in our heads.
Yeah.
This society has put us all up in our heads, and we're just running these thought patterns when your story, for instance, was inspired by the heart, by an emotional reaction, by an event. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think we need a little more of that and a little less thinking and comparing, that sort of thing. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, comparing. Absolutely. So, Jordan, when I give my talks, I see people taking notes and I stop midway and I said, listen, you don't have to take notes. All my slides, whoever invited me, coordinated this event, will share with you and you can use them, you can share them, you can modify them. You don't have to give me attribution. I call it copy left.
Nice. Nice.
So I gave this talk at a Christian college, a version of this talk at a Christian college called Assumption College in Worcester, Massachusetts, about a year and a half ago. And one of the deans wrote to me 6 days later, said, Dr. Chopra, what an amazing, inspiring talk. But I took your cue and I went over your slides with my husband and it was so much fun. But I also took your cue and asked my 5-year-old daughter, what is happiness? And Jordan, this is the wisdom of children. I call them the modern day philosophers. And her 5-year-old daughter said, Mommy, happiness is when the heart feels bigger.
Oh, that's perfect.
Isn't that amazing? I gave it a surgical grand rounds at Harvard Medical School, and the residency program director reached out to me and said, Sanjeev, can we meet for coffee and continue this conversation? So I said, sure. So we met 2 weeks later. We sit down. He says, I have a son. He's 2 years, 10 months. And I asked him, what makes you happy? And he said, Daddy, I'm most happy when I'm sharing my toys with my friends.
Oh.
And you know, John Lennon, when he was 5 years of age, goes to school and the teacher says to the kids, write down what you want to be when you grow up. So he writes happy and he hands it to the teacher. And the teacher says, John, you didn't understand the assignment. And he looks up at the teacher and he says, and you don't understand life.
Absolutely.
5 years of age, his mother every night when she tucked him into bed said, John, when you grow up, I want you to be happy. So I think the modern day philosophers are children. But there's also, and I've now incorporated this in my talk, there's also infinite wisdom in fictional characters and in cartoons.
Mm.
So, you know, Winnie the Pooh, that book was written almost 90 years ago.
Yes.
And I got interviewed by BBC a few months ago, and they said, Dr. Chopra, you're a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, and you're quoting Winnie the Pooh? So, how come? And I said, you know, look at one of the comments. Winnie the Pooh says to Piglet, if you live to be 100, I want to live to be 100 minus one day, because I cannot live a day without you.
Mm.
How beautiful and sublime is that friendship and that love?
100%.
Right? And then there's a wonderful cartoon I saw recently. It's Charlie Brown sitting with Snoopy. You see their backs. They're looking at a sunset. And Charlie Brown says, we only live once. And Snoopy says, wrong. We only die once. We live every day.
Oh, that's genius. I'll tell you, Sanjeev.
Brilliant.
Another great example of that is make sure, listeners, to check out the Mr. Rogers documentary. I believe it's called Will You Be My Neighbor? My goodness. If you understand his mission in life and what he was trying to do and how deeply, deeply religious he was, it's incredible. Awesome. And I'll also say this on that. This will be interesting to you, Sanjeev. I interviewed Garrett Gunderson, and we were talking about, he's a financial expert, we were talking about money, but at a certain point, the conversation turned towards the show Star Trek and how there was no money in that movie and whatever. And I said, isn't that fascinating? And he said, you know, the thing about Star Trek is when you try to convince someone who thinks differently of you of a different opinion, it's very hard to do it with reality and real examples. But if you take, for instance, you know, black and white race out of the situation and replace it with fictional characters like Vulcans and Klingons, somehow that can really resonate with people more deeply. And I thought that was so fascinating because he was so right on about that, right?
Absolutely right. So, you know, I took your dad's course.
Oh, yes, you did go through Lifebook.
Amitabh, my wife, on Lifebook.
I love it. Writing it down, old school. I love it.
Oh, my God. It was, you know, I teach success in life principles. I've been teaching it for 30 years, but it's like a 2-hour, 3-hour, 4-hour session. This was 3.5, almost 4 days.
Right.
And I was blown away by his wisdom, the way he looked at life.
Oh, thank
and
you.
And by the group discussion. So, we were only, 14, 16 people, and two of the people were like two of the top financial people in the country.
Right.
They invest other people's money to the tune of $3-4 billion a year. And there was when it came to finance, we had this discussion. And one of the definitions of wealth that came up, and I tend to be reticent and uncomfortable talking about money when I get invited to give a keynote by a company, you know, International Federation of XYZ or Whole Foods or GE, and they say, what's your honorarium? I don't even talk about it.
Right.
You know, and say, oh, my message is more important and I'm grateful and I'm honored you're inviting me, et cetera, et cetera. But in the discussion, one of the definitions that came up for true wealth, which I have not forgotten, and I've shared this now with many, many people. True wealth is what money can't buy and death cannot take away.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that amazing? So, you know, when you're with your friends, when you experience something amazing, when you take part in a charity event, you know, money can't buy that.
Yes.
And death cannot take away. That's the legacy you leave behind. You know?
100%.
It's not how much money you gave to your kids or your grandkids. True wealth is what money can't buy and death cannot take away.
That's beautiful.
I was blown away.
That's beautiful. Those are great parting words. Sanjeev, thank you so much for doing this, man. This was incredible.
Jordan,
I love
happy to be back anytime. Thank you.
Of course.
God bless and all my love and blessings.
Absolutely. So all you listeners, you need to check out SanjeevChopra.com. Check out the books. Check out the talks. Sanjeev, anything coming up that you want to promote here in October or anything?
You know, I'm traveling a lot. I'm living my purpose. I'm going to San Diego in 2 weeks. To give this talk on happiness, living with purpose to the American College of Physicians chapter in California. And then I'm going to Santa Fe, where I do a 6-day medicine course.
Oh, wow.
And give multiple talks. This will be our 22nd year. I'm one of the course directors. I'll be speaking on leadership and happiness and some liver talks. that I'm going to Puerto Vallarta in Mexico, a new friend, Jackie Camacho, who lives in Chicago, an amazing lady originally from Mexico. She didn't know how to speak a word of English since she was 13. She has now got a publishing company and does events.
Wow.
Like 13 books. And they're going to be 100 top Latina women from around the world. And she's invited me to give the keynote on happiness.
Nice,
and Amitha will give them a talk on meditation, ancient wisdom, modern scientific underpinnings. And then I'm planning to go to India. So this year, by the end of the year, I'll be fortunate enough to have traveled to 10 countries, living my purpose.
I love it, man. I absolutely love it. Again, I look forward to speaking with you. And then listeners, make sure to check out the Coffee, Health, and Science podcast today. It's really great stuff. And again, thank you, Sanjeev. I'll let you go, buddy. You have a wonderful day and travel safely, okay?
You too. All the best.
All right. Bye, Sanjeev. Bye.
Bye.
And everybody listening, thank you so much for being Lifebook members. It's a pleasure to serve you guys. Best of luck for Career Month and beyond. This is Jordan River and Dr. Sanjeev Chopra signing off saying, have an extraordinary day.